There's a beautiful philosophy in South Africa known as Ubuntu, which puts our connections with other people at the center of human life. It was used a lot by Nelson Mandela and by Archbishop Desmond Tutu, but the concept itself goes way back in South Africa and also in parts of Central and East Africa. James Ogude is a Kenyan-born literary scholar who's written several books about Ubuntu, and Steve and I caught up with him at a recent humanities conference in Ethiopia.
Ubuntu is a Southern African concept. What it means, Ubuntu is rooted in what I call a relational form of personhood, meaning that you are because of the others in relation to other people.
So this is totally different than the Western notion of the self, which is rooted in individualism.
Yes, it is different. Although one needs to qualify that, you know, there's always this tendency when we talk about African communitarian ethos to argue that it deletes individuality. It doesn't. People will debate, people will disagree. It's not like there are no tensions. The myth that, you know, people share everything, they are not selfish people. No, that's not what communitarian ethos is. Yeah. It is basically about you come together as a community, build a consensus around what affects the community. And once you have debated and it is understood that this is the best for the community, then you have to buy into it.
Did you grow up with it in any way?
Look, some of these values, they're not written, but you feel them in your day-to-day practice. You are not just your father's child. You also belong to the community. When we were growing up, you could eat anywhere. You know, you go to the neighbor would take care of you if you're starving. If there's birth, a baby has been born, the whole community brings what they have. And people celebrate, you know, it's a way of affirming life.
And it also sounds like if then someone has trouble or a family has trouble, there's kind of the sense that the neighbors, the village, will pitch in and help.
Yeah, certainly, yeah. And without being idealistic, they are also deviant. You deviate from the norms of the society. For example, you're selfish. You get ostracized. People talk about you. They say, you know, so-and-so is very selfish. They even say it, you know, this one is not a human being. And that extends even to animals, because the Ubuntu cosmology, especially among the Bantus, is about the totality. You've got a responsibility to the plants around you. You've got a responsibility to the animals around you. You've got a responsibility to the ancestors and by extension to the supreme being. That's why you sacrifice to the lakes.
What does that mean to sacrifice to the lakes?
Basically, it's a source of life. It gives you fish. You are not allowed to engage in overfishing. If you caught too much, you're obliged to return some. And you pray to the lake gods or whatever to continue nourishing and giving people back life.
We've been talking about Ubuntu in sort of as a moral and ethical system, but I wonder if at a deeper, almost epistemological level, it's a different way of understanding what it means to be alive or to have a sense of self. I mean, I'm thinking about Descartes. I think, therefore I am.
I am, yeah.
This seems fundamentally different.
Different, yeah. Precisely. It is a major epistemological concept, radically very different from your Western idea of, you know, I think, so I am. And Ubuntu draws our attention to what I call the idea of co-agency, where you realize that interdependence is fundamental, you know, principle in life, as opposed to what we find in the West.
So can you give me some concrete examples of this sort of Ubuntu in practice?
Look at the South African context, where you emerge out of a totalitarian regime. A lot of injustice has been done. You enter this moment where you want to transform this society. And then you realize that the structures of justice are in themselves inadequate. They were crafted within the womb of that very authoritarian regime that you're talking about.
The whole legal system.
The whole legal system. So where do you start to bring a divided society together? Where do you start to bring a society that is emerging out of trauma and the traumatic conflict? And this is where the Archbishop Desmond Tutu, who was chairing the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, decides that there's a way in which we can dig into our culture and find something that will help us to bring about restoration, to bring about healing, a humanitarian value that transcends our differences, as it were. And then he decides that Ubuntu, and he combines it with what he calls the Christian, the Dei Imago theology, which basically says that we are all made in the image of God. So fundamentally, we are the same. Our differences are fictitious, are manufactured, and very much ideological. And that's when he came up, popularized the idea of Ubuntu.
So do you see the whole notion of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, I mean, how that played out in South Africa, that was very much rooted in an African sense of justice that would be very different than what might happen in the West?
Yes, it was, because your Western justice system is retributive. You bring the criminal there, he stands before a judge, and
he's found guilty
he's
or innocent.
Thrown guilty or innocent. If he's guilty, he's thrown in. But nothing happens to the victim. Nobody understands. In a way that also takes care of the victim and the perpetrator at the same time. Create a sense of dialogue. And this is what the South African Truth and Reconciliation Commission was trying to do.
So this is a system and a philosophy that goes way, way back. So many cities in Africa now are really focused on a rush to become hyper-modern. Are you concerned at all about Ubuntu as a philosophy being forgotten, or do you feel like there's a way it could be revived and work in a kind of hyper-modern society?
Yeah, this is a very interesting and complex question, because one of the arguments that we have against Ubuntu, or many African values for that matter, is that in the post-colonial moment, we are cosmopolitan, the society has become increasingly very individualistic. You go into a city and it's a site of survival of the fittest. How do you survive? And yet, to the contrary, one of the most fascinating things, the way that they reproduce some of these networks of support. They come from far, they move into the city of Ethiopia or Johannesburg or Nairobi, and they realize this acute sense of alienation. So what do? You build a network of support among yourselves, so that the first thing you do when you arrive in a city and you don't have a place, you go to your next cousin and you stay with him until you get a job, and then you can move on. In South Africa, they call it the black tax, that we always have this responsibility to our siblings. You finish the university and you have to educate your cousins, not just your brothers, but you also educate your cousins. So these networks persist, and they persist precisely because of the awareness of our interdependence, the awareness that you have a moral obligation to support those around you.
So we've been talking about Ubuntu kind of as a philosophical idea and sort of how it plays out in various communities. I'm wondering how this plays out in your own life. I mean, are there sort of specific things that have happened to you or choices that you make that you do because of this tradition of Ubuntu?
Not so much because I had Ubuntu as a concept at the back of my mind, but because I was brought up in a network where I was supported by others. I was sent to school by my brother. My father passed away when I was in standard 5. And it's my brother that took the responsibility to send me to school.
What did your brother do?
He moved me away from the rural area and took me to the city where I was staying, paid for me fees in a private school, which is a lot of money to be paid monthly. And I always look back and say that if it was not for his intervention, perhaps I would just be some hard boy around the village, you know, looking after cows and being paid and doing manual work. But that also meant that I also had a responsibility. So I've had to also educate those around me, my brother's kids, my sister's kids. In fact, at one moment in Johannesburg, I was staying with seven teenagers going to the university, because I went to South Africa, saw the opportunity because the South African education system was good, especially postgraduate. And I said, okay, I'll also support them. So I started bringing them over. But it did not end with my own family. So I decided that I will start recruiting students from Kenya, from Nigeria, from Uganda, a whole lot of them. I see that as an expression of Ubuntu in certain ways. And some of them would come, you know, stay with me for 2-3 weeks before they settle down. These are things that you kind of internalize as you grow up. You see that people have supported you and you also have to give back.
Steve Paulson and I talked with James Ogude at the first African Humanities Workshop at the University of Addis Ababa in Ethiopia. It was sponsored by CHCI, the Consortium of Humanities Centers and Institutes. We're partnering with them to bring you an ongoing series of ideas from Africa. For more about Ubuntu, decolonizing the mind, and James Ogude's personal story, you can find background and a transcript of our full conversation online. Look for the link at ttbook.org.